This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think we're just starting to scratch the surface of what he actually brings, you know, to the table here. We've got an opportunity here to see it, you know, all unfold in front of our eyes.
Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff on yesterday's press conference announcing the signing of Patrick Laine to a two-year, $13.5 million contract extension. That sound you hear is a sigh of relief from Winnipeg Jets fans that one of the Jets' two big RFAs is now under contract. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, Universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. It's our comprehensive 2019-20 NHL season preview show. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets. We're going division by division, team by team, getting you set for the upcoming season, which of course begins on Wednesday. The Jets in action on Thursday, but before then, one more exhibition game tomorrow afternoon in St. Paul, Minnesota. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Then big news yesterday, of course, Patrick Laine's two-year, $13.5 million contract extension.
Yeah, and I think it caught all of us by surprise because we heard just a couple of days earlier, boys, that there weren't that many new developments in contract talks for Laine or Connor, right? I was sitting in my office yesterday and I was thinking, okay, we're going to focus on the Jets and talk about, you know, the absences of Laine and Connor and Buff. And then, you know, lo and behold, the tweet comes out by Drager, Darren Drager, of course, and that was probably around noon, I believe.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, you know, we hear the official announcement from the Jets, right? So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right, guys? I mean, we've been talking about this for months. I mean, we knew it was going to be somewhere around $6.5 million to $7 million on a bridge deal. And, you know, Laine gets a little bit more money in the second year. So the Jets have to qualify him at 7.5, you know, after the second year of the contract is over. So it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you think about it, there's only 5 days before the first NHL regular season game for the Jets.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean,
Thursday in New York,
you're already kind of cutting it close. And, you know, I'll go on the record and say that I'm surprised that Laine signed before Connor. I do think that Connor is going to get done very quickly. I mean, It could happen today. It'll probably happen in
hopefully
the next...
Hopefully not
during the show?
Well, because...
You're just selfishly worrying about the website. I know what you're worrying about.
A little psych on the legal curve.
Yeah, no, I want it during the show. There'll be some good quality content if it breaks right in the middle of the next 3 hours. Don't be so selfish, Dave.
Fine.
You got to think it's going to happen, though. I mean, there's no reason to think that Connor is going to be unsigned come late next week, right, when the Jets play the Rangers on Thursday. Like, I really think that, you know, the Connor contract is something that was less contentious than the Laine contract. I realize that, you know, you have to come to that magic number and you have to figure out the AAV and all of that, but you have to think that, you know, Connor is going to be somewhere around $7 million. And it's actually nice that with Buff out of the lineup, the Jets are going to have a little bit of breathing room. Wow. Because if Buff is in the lineup, then you're going to have to massage the salary cap, obviously, based on what Connor gets. It could be a little bit higher than you would like, right? So
they have $14.8 million of cap space currently available. That, of course, doesn't include Bufflin's $7.6 million. So take away his $7.6 million. He means you got $7.2 million to work with for Kyle Connor. And obviously, depending on the terms of the deal, whenever that deal comes, the Jets should be able to get that in their salary cap structure without having to subtract somebody else from the roster, Dave. And we all are waiting, of course, on the Kyle Connor news. And, you know, when that happens, you'll hear it first here on TSN Radio 1290. But the Laine news, I think everybody just sort of, it went from DEFCON 5 yesterday around the Jets to maybe just relieving the pressure a little bit more. You know, you're going to have Laine in the lineup on Thursday. He's probably not going to be at 100% by Thursday in terms of, you know, his skating and everything else, because you can never replicate game situations even when skating, you know, overseas in Zurich. But it won't take him long, and that, you know, weapon on the power play will certainly be there for game one in New York, Dave.
Yeah, no, and I think it's something that, with all the question marks surrounding the Winnipeg Jets and with everybody kind of pillaring this team, I think, you know, this team needed some good news. So I think that's probably, a motivator from the Jets' perspective. You know, Patrick Laine's perspective, the team, you know, it's getting closer and closer to the regular season. He needed to get that done. I mean, it's one of those deals that kind of, it's a little bit of a head scratch in the sense that this is what it took so long, like, to get to arrive at that number. Like, it's oftentimes, like, it's like when we hear about an arbitration hearing and you think to yourself, okay, you're going to meet somewhere in the middle, and it's going to be relatively close like this. Like, in my mind, the only real sticking points really was probably term more than the money. Because really, from the Jets' perspective, okay, you know, you've got this. He's still 2 years away from being a UFA after this deal concludes. So from the Jets' perspective, you've still got some certainty around Patrick Laine. You can work on getting that next big deal with him done after this bridge is over. And from Patrick Laine's perspective, you got a decent amount of money for the next 2 years. Uh-huh. And again, you're betting on yourself, which is what everybody expected. I mean, it was that this really comes as no surprise. Nobody expected Patrick Laine to sign, in my mind, a long-term contract based on last year.
Yeah.
We knew that he, again, sees the opportunity here in Winnipeg, knows what he presents. You know, so to me,
if his floor is 30 goals, which, you know, given the season he had last year, it seems like his floor is about 30 goals because he did not have a good year and still put up 30.
Yeah.
His ceiling, as we've talked about ad nauseum since the Jets, you know, had the opportunity to draft him second overall, we know his ceiling is 50, 60, somewhere in and around that vicinity.
Yeah.
Well, you go out and you prove yourself over the next 2 years. The Jets will happily give you an 8-year contract worth $10 million a season if you go and score 50 goals, or you go and score, you know, 45, 50 goals on a regular basis. There's no downside from either side's perspective, as far as I can see. The Jets get him under contract for a couple seasons. You know, reasonable cap hit. Laine, you know, certainly, you know, is set for life with, you know, the $13.5 million plus, you know, whatever he's made already in his career. And he's got the opportunity for another long-term deal after that. So, you know, it took a little while and there was more public posturing than either side probably wants. But, you know, c'est la vie with some negotiations. We've seen other negotiations have no posturing. I mean, Kyle Connor's negotiation has had basically no comments at all on the record, aside from when he was in town for the golf tournament. That was the last time we really heard from Kyle Connor. So just different ways to sort of go about and try and get a similar deal done.
No, I agree with you, Drew. The Laine and Connor contract situations are much different. And obviously, you know, they're a year apart, but because we knew that the long-term contract was not really an option for Patrick Laine, that alone makes them different. And I agree, what we've heard from each player, you're right, we haven't heard a lot from Connor. It's been radio silence from his camp, whereas, you know, Laine has been making all the news, like you said, with his comments overseas and all that. But what I think is really interesting, guys, is when you see some of the other contracts that were signed by the other big RFAs, right? I'm taking Mitch Marner out of the equation, but I'm talking about the 3-year deals.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting, though, that it ended up being a 2-year deal, because if you think about it, you know, you get 7.5 in the second year deal. And I agree with you, back to what you said before, this is the type of contract that if Laine puts up the type of numbers that everybody expects him to put up, you know,
we're talking
45, 50 goals, I think he could probably even hit 60. I mean, let's be honest, he probably could. We have no idea if that's going to happen, but he'll for sure hit 50. Most people agree on that. But you know, if you're looking at, let's say, $8.5 million, which it sounds like Laine's camp, Mike Liut being his agent, it seems like they were looking for around 8 to 8.5 in that third year. So, you know, if you were to give Laine $8.5 million in that third year, then that takes the AAV up to 7.3.
Yeah.
Right? So that can affect a lot of other things, because you haven't signed Connor yet and you don't know the future of Buff. I mean, we don't. Right now, it's basically 50-50 with Buff. Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless somebody else knows, from everything that I've gathered and everybody that I've talked to, seems like nobody really knows which way Buff is going to go, right? So I think that it's better, in a way, for the Jets that they didn't give him that third year. And Laine doesn't lose any money, because let's be honest, Laine's next contract, he's going to make a lot of money.
You would expect it to.
You would expect him to be making, what, $9 to $10 million a year?
Well, you would expect
something like that.
If he gets the goals that, you know, if he puts up the goal scoring numbers,
the way he does,
that we expect, where, you know, on a bad year, he gets 30. On a good year, you know, like you said, on a good year, the number probably begins with a 5. I mean, I can go up closer to a 6 in terms of the number of...
When you can score 18 goals in 1 month, I realize that he struggled big time and there were, you know, big goal-scoring droughts last year, but when you can score 18 goals in 1 month, you can easily score 50 goals.
I think there's something to be said for, now that the contract is done and you know he's going to be, you know, on the team for the next 2 seasons and presumably for a few years after that, that, you know, obviously you don't want it necessarily done in public, but I think there is something to be said for the clearing of the air that has happened. I mean, obviously, Laine may have been a little bit insensitive with some of his comments about Brian Little, things of that nature, but...
Well, again, I remember, we got to think, that was a lot of advocacy, I think.
Sure.
From Pekka Ilonen. So, I mean, were the comments, and of course, none of us speak Finnish, so we don't know. But like, I just know that there's, to my in my mind,
yeah.
And
which you said last week, and
I feel strongly about it. I just feel like that there's a lot of
slant being placed on the comments.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, again, you just don't have to look very far. You just look behind at Pekka's tweets for the previous 2 years, and you just look at the way he references Brian Little and you know, maligns him quite often. So in my mind, whether Laine actually said it or whether it was taken out of context, I'd be more inclined to believe it was taken out of context.
In any event, at least, you know, the air is sort of cleared. Everybody's, you know, said their piece. Everybody has, you know, has sort of aired their grievances, and now you can move forward in are you eating a mustard packet, Ezra? Are you eating a mustard packet?
It's not Ezra. It's actually Mark Letestu.
Where did you get a mustard packet at 9:11 in the morning?
I'm trying to avoid cramping.
Where did you get that?
Sev.
You stopped this morning at 9:11 in the morning and got a mustard packet?
I got several.
You got several?
Well, now that Mark Letestu's doing it, I mean...
It doesn't mean you have to do it.
Well, I mean, if
I'm shocked you don't have a hot dog, I'll be perfectly honest. First of all, you just pulled out this mustard packet. I mean, all of a sudden, I'm looking over at you, and you're eating
mustard. I'm just trying to get a reaction out of you. I didn't want to tell you that I was going to do it before we went.
That was some serious prop comedy because he'd advise me. Didn't tell me either.
Yeah, all of a sudden, I look over and you're eating a mustard packet.
I was looking at Drew because Drew was talking. I look over, I see Ezzy downing this mustard.
You know what? Now that Letestu has made it mainstream and it's fine just to eat random mustard packets.
Let's be honest. Knowing what we know of your life and particularly your life prior to marriage and children, this isn't the first time you've eaten a mustard packet.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true. Even when there's no hot dog involved, you've been downing relish and mustard packets and ketchup and the whole nine yards.
The weirdest part was when I went to 7-Eleven, there's a 7-Eleven right down the street from my house. So
they know you by name.
I was looking around for mustard packets. I'm like, I'm going to bust this out during the show and not tell Drew or Dave about it. But I asked the woman that was working at Sev where the mustard packets were. And she looked at me like, why are you asking for mustard packets? And you're not holding a hot dog or a hamburger. So I went over. I bought a chocolate milk, as you see right here.
Yes.
And then
So just for the record, so far this morning, you've had a chocolate milk, which you've... Then, you know, you've supplemented with a mustard packet.
And coffee.
Oh, God almighty. Yeah.
Quality radio.
Never mind quality radio. You're going to be a mess for the rest of the show is what you're going to be.
Well, no, but at least you won't have cramps.
It reduces cramping. I don't want to get cramps. We're on the air for 3 hours here. Like, I want to make sure that I'm tip top here.
But, you know, the cramping comes when you're an athlete and you're doing something athletic. You're pretty, you know, stationary in that chair.
I get up during the breaks.
Okay, fair
Anyways.
Enough. Go on, Dave.
I was going to say before that quite a display that Paul Friesen of the Winnipeg Sun talked to Mike Liut, and Paul put out these tweets. He said, for those who wonder about Laine's long-term commitment to Winnipeg, his agent said, and I quote, I'd say you're way over your skis there. This is a kid that 2 seasons ago said Winnipeg's okay for me, and last year was not a good year for him on a variety of fronts. Okay, but that's not fatal. And then one more on Laine's camp's talks with the Jets. We had some complaints about the year. They had some complaints about the year. We were trying to get on the same page. The contract we settled on was a strong step in the right direction. So,
and I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, they've aired their grievances. They've moved on. They got the 2-year deal. I think the sky is the limit going forward because I think it's the 30 goals, the only 30 goals, I think is an aberration as opposed to, you know, going to be where he consistently falls.
If you just look at his shooting percentage and his career trajectory, I mean, it's safe to assume he's going to be around 40 to 45.
Yeah,
I think that's what, you know, most projections have him at right now. So, you know, going back to, you know, all of these comments over the summer and all of that, I mean, there is just, I just don't think that we're going to be talking about this or anybody is going to be referencing that or this is going to be any type of storyline at all throughout the year. I'm talking about Laine's comments about wanting to play on the top line or any of that. I really think that these pro hockey players don't really let that become an issue. I mean, and why should we be surprised? If you're the best sniper in the NHL or one of the best snipers in the NHL, why wouldn't you want to play with Mark Scheifele?
You would?
right? I mean,
which is basically what Paul Maurice said, and you know, Blake Wheeler said is, you know, if you think you're one of the best players, you want to play with the best players. And mm-hmm. there's only so many best players to go around, which is a bit of the downside to it. But you know what? Patrick Laine, I'm sure, is going to get his opportunity. Nikolaj Ehlers is obviously going to get his opportunity, potentially to start the season. I'm expecting that to be the lineup, you know, on Thursday in New York. If Kyle Connor's not signed by then, is Ehlers with Scheifele and Wheeler. And, you know, Laine is going to certainly get his opportunity. And, you know, it's a long season, and I think the sky's the limit in terms of his goal scoring. When we come back, we're going to talk about the forward lines. We're going to talk about the training camp, the cuts that have been made so far. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, we want more out of him. Not that he hasn't given us enough, but the next step for the franchise is all of those players go from Young to Mark Scheifele and to Adam Lowry. They came in as kids. Now we don't talk about them. They're driving the bus. These guys got to take that next step. It's
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about Nikolaj Ehlers, saying it's time for Ehlers to drive the bus on a line to be, you know, one of the top superstars on this team, mentioning him in the same ilk as Mark Scheifele, Adam Lowry, and the other, you know, Blake Wheeler, obviously, you can put into that list of players as well. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, TJ Miller is in town. You heard him yesterday. He sort of crashed the round table with Kevin O there. You heard him all over our various sister stations as well. The shows have all been sold out, so they've added a 7 p.m. show on Sunday. That's almost sold out as well. Get your tickets now before it's too late. RumorsComedyClub.com. I'll be there tonight at the late show. Again, TJ Miller all weekend long. Tomorrow, a special Sunday 7 o'clock show. Tickets available. RumorsComedyClub.com.
And Drew, you'll be doing an autograph session, right?
Exactly. That's exactly. It's a meet and greet with me, in fact. Yeah. You know, there's a meet and greet with TJ Miller and then a meet and greet with me later on tonight. Nobody's going to want my autograph. That was not like you there, Mustard Boy. You're now a minor celebrity for that move. Let's talk about the Jets forward lines. Obviously, they made some more cuts to the training camp roster. They're down to 16 forwards in camp, not including Kyle Connor right now, of course, but including Patrick Laine, as he's going to join the team in the next couple of days. So with 16 forwards to go, you know, they're going to start the season, obviously, with 13 forwards, maybe 14 forwards, depending on how they break camp. Who's made this team? Who are going to be the final cuts that are still on the roster that you wouldn't have expected? We know that Andrei Chibisov went down to the Moose yesterday. We know that Christian Vesalainen went down to the Moose yesterday. We know that Michael Spacek went down to the Moose yesterday. Players that you might not have expected that still are here. CJ Cease, he's still here. Yuno Luoto, David Gustafson, JC Lapon. You know, there's still some battles for the final spots playing out. How do you see it happening over the next few days, Dave?
Well, I would say that based on his comments, that, and we know that Paul Maurice tends to like his veteran lineups. So I suspect that guys like Letestu and Bork will be sticking around. CJ Cease, I like CJ. I think he's a good defensive hockey player.
He's had a good camp.
Yeah, and you know what? He had a good camp last year, too. I think that he'll probably start the season with the Moose, if I had to guess. David Gustafson, again, another player who I really like. I think he's a really good defensive player. I watched his game when Jets were in Calgary. I tried to really just kind of watch him, you know, as opposed to watching the overall play. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you know, he's a really smart player. But, you know, again, he would have to go back.
Expectation is he's still going to go back to Sweden.
Well, he'd have to go back to Sweden with his contract situation. JC Lapon, again, similar to last year, he was one of the last guys sent down. You know, I kind of thought that the JC Lapon would be in the mix, but because you got Letestu and Bork already there, I suspect, you know, he'll be going down as well. And Mason Appleton, I thought he had a better game. I was impressed with the way, like, he's good on the PK, and the Jets were using him a little bit on the PK against the Oilers on Thursday. So I thought, you know, Appleton will probably stick with the Jets if I had to guess, but I would go Lapon, Gustafson, and Cease for sure, probably be either sent to the Moose or go back to Europe for
right. And back to what Drew said earlier with the cuts. I mean, I'm pretty shocked that Christian Vesalainen wasn't one of the last cuts. Not so much for Andrei Chibisov, because obviously Chibisov is a guy that's new to the Jets organization, but I also thought Chibisov has had a really good training camp and he showed really well in the preseason, right? Like with the size, and you know, we talked to Dennis Bayak last week about it. I mean, Chibisov is a guy that you could definitely see as maybe a recall at some point in the season, but I agree with you, Dave. I mean, JC LaPonne, I think, you know, a guy that has obviously been, you know, such a valuable player for the Manitoba Moose, but a guy who right now, it's just a numbers game, right? Clearly, Gabriel Bourque is going to be a guy that, you know, Paul Maurice is going to be able to put there on the penalty kill, and he's most likely going to be on the fourth line. I mean, you don't really want Gabriel Bourque playing more of a fourth line role.
It seems like Bourque and Letestu are going to be, are certainly their fourth line, and they also might be the first guys over the boards on the PK. And then the question is, who's going to play alongside them on that fourth line? Is that where you put in a guy like Yuna Luoto? Is that a place where you see Mason Appleton?
That's what I think it's going to come down to. I mean, you mentioned, you know, I'm just kind of repeating here what Dave said, but I mean, CJC's, JC LaPonne, I mean, these guys are going to be top six forwards for the Moose this year. Mm-hmm. And to me, it really is going to come down to Yuna Luoto and Mason Appleton, and you really have to give Appleton, I think, the advantage. I mean, you know, I might be a bigger Appleton fan than some, and I realize that, you know, we haven't maybe seen enough from him offensively, Dave. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just based on, you know, his body of work last year, I mean, Appleton's a very versatile player, and I do think that he has untapped offensive potential. I'm not saying that he's going to necessarily score, you know, 20 goals at the NHL level, but I could easily see him scoring 10 this year. And, you know, even though in the preseason, maybe, you know, he's had a few games where he wasn't as noticeable, or maybe he struggled a little bit at times, I think you'd have to give Appleton the edge over Luoto. But Luoto is a guy that, you know, you keep hearing, you know, Paulie Edmonds was talking about this yesterday on the broadcast, kind of like a Brandon Tanev clone. And I get that, right? Because, you know, you need somebody to play that kind of role, whether that's on the third line or the fourth line. So, you know, I would probably give the edge to Appleton, but it looks like right now it's going to be Letestu and Bourque on that fourth line. And back to David Gustafson, I think it's really impressive that he's even in the mix right now, guys, because when you're talking about, you know, he's a second round pick from 2018, but we expected his first pro year, you know, just to play with the Moose and then, you know, go from there, right? But it looks like, you know, he might be farther ahead than we thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of the intelligence of his game is what Paul Maurice has spoken so highly about over the last, you know, throughout training camp.
Well, and with a team that's going to be required to be more defensively minded,
sure,
that type of attitude isn't a bad thing.
No, it's certainly not. I mean, if you have this fourth line of Letestu and Bourque, and if you're assuming that Scheifele and Wheeler are together, and I expect it to be Ehlers to at least start the season in New York, are you looking at a second line of Little, Perreault, and Laine? I mean, is that sort of the second line, or, you know, forget about the numbers. Is that a line that's going to start together? And then Kopp, Lowry, and Roslovic, is that going to be a line that stays together with that fourth line being, you know, between, you know, Bourque, Letestu, Luoto, Appleton, something along those lines? This, of course, with the asterisk of we don't know when Kyle Connor gets back in.
Well, Jack Roslovic is a passer. Jack Roslovic is not a goal scorer. So, I mean, he's the kind of guy who could facilitate getting that puck to Patrick Laine. I'm just saying that if you need that sort of pass-first mentality, Jack Roslovic is your guy. Matthew Perreault, as we know, is a guy who's great, you know, and really does improve whatever line he's on. Mm-hmm. Has a tendency to, you know, really, I mean, we saw it with the puck retrieval in the Oilers zone, and he got it out to Gabriel Bourque, who scored the, I think it was the third goal for the Jets. And from that perspective, so either guy, you know, they bring different things. But again, Jack Roslovic, looking for an opportunity, I mean, that could really be a kind of a bit of a natural fit, right, to be a facilitator on that line.
The only reason I'm putting Roslovic with Kopp and Lowry is they played the first couple of preseason games together as a line, and it seemed like there was some chemistry, or it seemed like they were trying something out there. I mean, there's obviously no guarantee that that's going to last for, you know, the entirety of the season, or going to last for more than one period. But when they take the ice on Thursday for the season opener, that's sort of what I'm expecting that line to be together. I mean, I could very easily be wrong, but that's sort of where I'm thinking. And then, you know, Perreault, Little, you know, Laine, you know, whether or not it's going to work or not. Or,
we might,
you know,
also see we might see Scheifele and Wheeler broken up. I mean, we're not. Yeah. I suspect, based on Paul Maurice's comments, you're not going to see it on Thursday. But I, you know, will he start to have to diversify just to see what's going to work? You know, because again, we can't keep trying the same thing and then hoping that you're going to get a different result.
And Dave, I've really liked Perreault on the top line as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Perreault has played with Scheifele before and Wheeler, and so you might see Perreault, Scheifele, Wheeler, and you know, if Scheifele and Wheeler are together, obviously, then you'd expect Lion A to either be with Little or Lowry, right? Because they like Kopp on the wing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been talking about this for a long time. I would love to see Kopp as a center because we know that he's played center and he's a natural center, right? Yeah. So, but it looks like, you know, that's not going to be the case. It looks like it's going to be Lowry, Letestu, Little, and Scheifele up the middle as it stands right now, right? Mm-hmm. But I think...
What do you think about
everything? Everything is going to depend on, as Dave said, if you split Scheifele and Wheeler up. Because I've said this many times before. My ideal, not that you know Paul Maurice necessarily cares what I think is ideal, but I'd love to see Ehlers, Scheifele, and Lion A as your top line.
What do you think about having those two veterans in who are, I'm going to say, limited 5-on-5 offensively in Bork and Letestu in your lineup? Is that a good strategy for the Winnipeg Jets? Is that the right strategy for the Jets to take?
Well,
I mean, you know, you're not going to get a lot from those guys 5-on-5. And, you know, depending on game flow, that could be a circumstance where, you have that fourth line that doesn't play more than 4, 5, or 6 minutes a game, which we've seen as a problem year in and year out for the last couple of seasons.
No, and I would say it's not ideal. I'm saying you've got to be realistic based on what the coaching staff has done traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
What is the most likely? Do I think it's better to than guys like Mason Appleton playing? Absolutely not. Do I think Mason Appleton sitting in the press box is a good thing for his development? No, and I've said that, you know, time and again, you know, for as long as I've been on doing radio with you guys, like the idea of guys sitting who are young prospects, sitting, watching games and practicing in the NHL versus playing. That's why I said, you know what, Vesalainen, I agree with Ezzie, like you could have kept him around, but maybe they want to kind of wake him up a little bit and say, listen, like you haven't really wowed us yet. But to me, Christian Vesalainen going down and playing in all situations with the Manitoba Moose, Logan Stanley the same. You want these guys, if they're not playing with the Jets, the Jets aren't going to play them. And again, you don't want the Jets playing these guys 4 to 6 minutes a game because that's useless as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality from my perspective is get these guys to the Moose, let them play big minutes with Pascal Vincent because his whole mantra is development. That's really what the Manitoba Moose are for. He embraces that. And so his goal with these young players is to develop them so they can be regular guys in the NHL. But I'm just saying that if you're not going to make them regular guys, I agree, like it's not ideal to have that as your fourth line. Because they are limited, you're not going to, and we've talked about this idea of burning out your lines. It's the same as the idea of like, you know, of using your goaltender too much. It's this, you want to be able to roll. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to say, we can put our second, third, and fourth lines out and not really miss a beat. Now, you're not going to have the same offensive power, but you need that.
You need them as close to 10 minutes. You need each of your four lines pretty close to 10 minutes a game. Double digits is what you want. I mean, having a fourth line, to your point, Dave, that only plays 5 minutes a game,
mm-hmm.
and that features two veterans, one rookie, and then another young player up in the press box, doesn't improve your team on a it might improve your team on a one-off basis, but the long-term curve of your team does not improve.
And the truth is, I mean, and don't get me wrong, these guys are like, but Mason Appleton can kill penalties. Like these guys are all been put in those roles with the Moose to do this at the NHL level. So it's not a function of them having an inability to do it. They may not do it as well as a veteran guy. They may make some mistakes. But the point is, wouldn't you rather have a guy who you could see that upward trajectory with a guy versus a guy you don't, you know, that's, you
know, his limitation, you know, his ceiling.
I was going to say, you know what their body of work is.
Absolutely. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more Winnipeg Jets conversation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. We want to hear what's on your mind regarding the Winnipeg Jets. You can also do so via text. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Jason Bell. Jason, good morning. How was the summer?
It was terrific, and as knows, I should probably be fishing right now, but I've stayed on the dock for you guys for this morning.
Isn't it a little cold to be fishing this early in the morning?
Yeah, it actually is really cold. I let the dogs out this morning, and it's pretty brutal, but I have been listening right from 9 o'clock, and I have to say that the content this morning does not cut the mustard.
Oh. Who's writing your jokes? Yeah, Jason's appearance is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
I think it's actually brought to you by French's Mustard.
I'm opening for Miller tonight. You've seen me in my latest film.
Yeah, exactly. Jason, thanks for joining us this morning. We'll let you get back to the cottage pretty quickly, but of course we want to bring you on, talk about the Jets as we sit here, you know, 5 days before the start of the regular season. The news yesterday that Patrick Laine agrees to that 2-year deal. Are you surprised that Laine got done before Connor did?
So we're going to talk about hockey. Or are we going to be talking about AAVs and escrows and all the fun stuff?
Well, hopefully hockey, because that's way more entertaining than having to get an MBA to talk about this.
I actually am surprised. I think a lot of us felt that Kyle Connor would get done sooner rather than later, and maybe Patrick Laine would be the stickling point. I thought that I think we've heard that Mike Liut has said in the past that they weren't close, and the numbers were really off between the two sides, and it just seemed like Kyle Connor was maybe going to get locked down long term. And I'm not surprised at all that Patrick Laine got a bridge. I thought it was going to take longer, that we might actually push into the regular season with him. So I think for Jet fans, this is a pleasant surprise. And I think there's got to be some hope that Kyle Connor is going to get done, prior to the start of the season.
You know, Jay, earlier last segment, we were talking about, there's 27 players left in camp, and we're trying to figure out who the last forwards remaining are going to be. And, it's probably going to be down to guys like Yuna Luoto and Mason Appleton and, Mark Letestu and Gabe Bork look like they've locked up fourth line spots. But who's impressed you most? Who's been a player that's surprised you for how well they played, regardless if they were sent down to the Moose? Was it maybe a guy like Andre Chibasov, or was it somebody else that, impressed you and you maybe exceeded your expectations?
Well, of course, I didn't know anything about Yuna Luoto before he was signed by the club. And I think, a lot of us that were at the Iceplex back after the draft when the Jets had that prospects camp, I think we looked at this guy and thought, wow, this is sort of a man against boys here. And we really like the style of play. And he was undrafted and comes a little unheralded. But, this is a guy that was a hockey player. And I think he has really even, ramped up things to a different level, playing against, men, not just in preseason action, where we all know the level of hockey can not be, what we see in the regular season. But, even just in drills at the Iceplex, and I really like the way this guy plays. And you're right. Is he going to unseat Mason Appleton for that 12th forward spot? I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that Paul Maurice would hate a fourth line of Mark Letestu, Gabriel Bork, and Yuna Luoto. He's a bit of a different style than, Brandon Tanev. He doesn't have that speed. He can't go from start to, stop to start with that kind of speed. But he does get on the puck really hard. He's hard along the walls. And, there's some skill there, too. And we saw that the other night against Edmonton, where he set up a goal or two. So I've really been impressed with him. Obviously, from the veteran standpoint, I've been really, really impressed with Laurent Brossoit. It goes without saying that he had a great season last year. Again, came in a little bit of an unknown with not the greatest resume, and has really come into training camp looking like a guy that, for all intents and purposes, could be a number one. Of course, he's not in our city, I've kind of liked what Dmitry Kulikov has done. There's a lot of heat on Dmitry Kulikov over the summer. Is this a guy that was going to get bought out? Is this a guy that's, the best days are behind him, and he's basically just on the IR far too often? And yet I thought that he's come in and played pretty darn well, and really out of necessity, because without Myers, without Sherratt, with Bufflin taking the leave, the surprising leave of absence, they really couldn't afford to get rid of Dmitry Kulikov, because then you're starting to look at a Nelson Ogier and really now aligned to fill in the gap. So I've been pretty impressed with what Dmitry Kulikov has done.
Well, as he asked you about the positives, let's look at the negatives. Should Jets fans be a little concerned that Christian Vesalainen didn't seem to show much in the four games? The 2017 first rounder for the Jets was sent down, obviously, with that group of five yesterday to the Moose. But is there a cause for concern with you, Jay, based on what you saw so far? Or do you think he'll go down to the Moose and get an opportunity down there?
Well, I was there, David, when he was drafted in Chicago. And there's just so much to like about this kid on paper. And, and then he had a You know, he had a pretty good camp last year, and he wins a job coming out. And you know, last year there was so much turmoil with him, and maybe he got some bad advice going, wanting to go back home and not staying in North America. Although he did pretty well in the KHL, and he comes back, and you watched him a lot, David. And, you know, he had some real good spurts with the Moose. But this camp has been a disaster for him. I mean, he just did not set himself apart from anybody. You know, in fact, you know, he became sort of a forgotten guy. I mean, there were times where in the broadcast and up in the booth, I mean, I forgot he was on the ice or never heard his name. So I don't think this kid has a whole lot of confidence right now. I don't necessarily know what kind of player he thinks he's going to be or wants to be. I mean, I think he doesn't understand the defensive part of the game. And then the one area that he does excel in his whole life is shooting the puck, and he hasn't unleashed any shots whatsoever during training camp. So I think he's got to get some normalcy and settle in and take on a role with the Moose, and Pascal Vincent and those guys will work with him. And far too early to call him a first round bust, obviously, but I certainly didn't have him making this hockey club pretty early in training camp.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. The Jets in the Wild, the final preseason game tomorrow afternoon, and then it gets started for real on Thursday as the Jets visit Madison Square Garden and make acquaintance with their old friend Jacob Trouba. Jason, Connor Hellebuyck, obviously it's preseason and, you know, all the asterisks that go next to that, but Connor Hellebuyck hasn't looked great so far in this preseason. How much concern do you have, if any, over his goaltending thus far?
Well, again, it's preseason, and I probably don't, but he's looked pretty cavalier, hasn't he? And that may be a little bit disturbing for Winnipeg Jets fans. I mean, is he saving himself for the regular season? You know, I guess something can be said about that, but I just look the way that Laurent Fossois has fought for pucks and has stood tall and has really been moving from side to side really, really well, and I haven't seen a lot of that from Connor Hellebuyck yet. I mean, he goes in as the bona fide number one. We know that. This is a trophy candidate, and he's won a lot of hockey games the last 2 years. But, you know, I think I'd like to see a little bit more of that tri-factor in the preseason. I don't think there should be a whole lot of concern, except if he goes into MSG and gets lit up, and then the next night, you know, they're staying out of that area, and all of a sudden the Jets are 1-2, and Connor Hellebuyck has lost two games. You know, how quickly does the goaltending controversy start in the city for a guy who's making, you know, $6.5 million as opposed to Laurent Fossois, who's making, you know, a sixth of that? So it's far too early to get too upset about Connor Hellebuyck's play, but I was looking for more in those appearances in the preseason.
Jay, we're 5 days away from the regular season opener. Drew just mentioned it in the Big Apple. Is Ville Heinola, or Heinola, I should say, 2019 first round pick, is he in the starting lineup for the Jets, in your opinion?
I would say no. I think the rigors of an NHL season, and I mean, look where they're starting and the kind of trip they have. I mean, you could really see the warts in his game, you know, coming to the fore in that kind of a trip. My goodness, he's only 18. He just got drafted. I mean, many of us only knew him from, you know, elite scouting reports of him prior to the draft, and all of a sudden we're penciling him in on the top six of a National Hockey League team. That's an awful lot to ask for this kid. He's been wildly impressive, and I should have mentioned him off the top when you talked about guys who are impressive. I just think that Paul Maurice is, and Kevin Chevalier, Dayoff, and the brass are more apt to go with the tried and true of a you know, an Anthony Boteto and sticking with the, you know, Morrissey and Pionk and Pullman and Boulot. I mean, obviously Tucker Pullman has had a great camp, and Boileau has been pretty good too. And, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, I still think, is going to return to this club. I have no inside information on that, but I think he's going to return. I just think it's better served for Ville Heinola to go back and play one more season overseas. And if they determine that he's going to play with the Moose and he wants that, then, you know, let Pascal Vincent and that group work with him. And because I think they've got a real, real blue chip prospect on their hands here. And why rush him?
You know, Jay, one player you have to ask about is Nikolaj Ehlers. He just seems ready to just break out and just really take his offensive game to the next level. What do you see from Nikolaj Ehlers so far in training camp?
Well, I've liked it. I mean, I've liked his again the compete level and getting in on pucks, and obviously he's, you know, north south. He goes so awfully fast when he decides to play north south. Doesn't want to do a lot of that zigzagging. And if he's going to play with 55 and 26 on the top line, I think he's got to take a little bit of that unpredictability out of his game, mm-hmm. and play a little more north south. But boy, he looks like he's a guy that is, as you say, is in regular season form. And I know that he wants to shake the that, you know, the shake off that where he goes on those streaks where he doesn't score goals. And I know he wants to be a more productive player, a much more consistent player. So I do look at him as starting on the top line if Kyle Connor is not available to start the season.
Jason,
you know, after that, you guys have already talked about this morning. I mean, then where does Patrick Laine play? And I still think I see him on the second line with Brian Little. And what's that old saying about doing things over and over to get the different results? But I just don't see any other options. And I do see Matthew Perreault on that second line. And the real question for me is Jack Roslovic. You guys talked a lot about him already this morning. And I just, you know, I think it is, I'm a little concerned about Jack Roslovic. I just don't know. I look and I don't know where he fits in. I like Mason Appleton on the third line with Kopp and Lowry because I think Mason Appleton is a little bit more of that Brandon Tanev style. And I like Uniluoto on the fourth line with Bork and Letestu. So what am I saying Jack Roslovic gets sent down to the Moose? Heavens no, but I don't know if he's in my starting 12, as crazy as that might sound. I mean, I haven't seen that great step, that development that we want to see out of Jack Roslovic. I don't know what his ceiling is. I've seen a lot of his body of work, and it doesn't impress me totally. You know, his agent thinks he should play with better players. I don't think he's earned it. So it remains to be seen how he slots in. But, I mean, there is a big question mark with Luoto, Appleton, and Mason as to who – or Luoto, Appleton, and Roslovic as to who the sort of those, you know, that 10, 11, 12, 13 forwards are.
Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Jason, final question for you. Assuming Kyle Connor is in the lineup on Thursday or pretty shortly thereafter, is this Jets team a playoff team?
Well, to me, it's a bubble team. I think, and I say that because I think I've looked across the Central Division like everybody else, and it certainly didn't get any easier. I mean, the Preds have no Subban, obviously, but they still have that great defensive core. And, you know, you throw in Duchesne with Forsberg, Arvidsson, and Johansson, and wow. I mean, Rene's 37, but he can still stop the puck. Dallas is better. You know, you throw in Joe Pavelski on that roster. John, don't call me Carl Klingberg, is still there. Ben Bishop, when he's healthy, is one of the best in the business. I think the Avs got better with Donskoy and Burkowski. I mean, Chicago and Minnesota are going to be the also-rans, but this is going to be an awfully tough division and in the conference to be in the top eight. I would say the Winnipeg Jets are going to win a lot of hockey games, but, you know, 96, 97 points, that might not get you in. So it remains to be seen. And without Dustin Byfuglien, that really, really throws a wrench into their plans to make the playoffs. But if he's back, it certainly improves their chances.
The fun starts on Thursday as the Jets head out on a four-game road trip to start the season. Jason Bell and his colleagues at the Winnipeg Free Press will be all over it. Jason, appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to one last weekend at the Cottage. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
You guys have a great day. Thanks.
Take care, Jason. When we come back, we continue our look at the Winnipeg Jets. We talk about the defensive pairings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview special on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
So where do you see his role going into the season, starting the season?
It probably exactly where it is right now. I mean, I don't want to unveil the spots, right? It's probably have to talk to a couple of guys before that, but he's earned the right, in my mind, to be in the opening night lineup.
What else stood out for you about tonight?
Jets coach Paul Maurice talking about Tucker Poolman earning the right to be in the opening night lineup. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friend, Dr. Les Rikus, and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So we've talked about the forward group. We've talked about the Line A signing. Let's talk about the defense. We know that the defense is the big question mark for the Winnipeg Jets. No Dustin Byfuglien. No end in sight. Status quo is the word on the street regarding his status.
As of last night.
As of last night. Of course, it can change just like that. If he decides he wants to be back a member, playing member of this team, they'll welcome him with open arms, but no idea how that's going to shake out over the next, you know, week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, month, whatever it might be. So the question I have for you guys on the Jets defense, is Ville Heinola a member of this defense come Thursday? Is he, has he played his way to be the rare 18-year-old defenseman joining an NHL roster?
Yeah, it's unbelievable that we're talking about that, right? Not because, you know, he isn't a highly skilled defenseman, just because he's 18 years old, right? So I certainly didn't think that we would be talking about this in late September, just because of his age alone. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, guys, because if you go back year after year and you look at the amount of 18-year-old players, not just defensemen, but forwards and defensemen, 18-year-olds that actually stick in the NHL for a full year, it's a small number. Yeah. I mean, you think it's a bigger number because you think about, you know, the Patrick Lyonnais and you think about the Rasmus Dahlins, but really it's only usually, you know, the best of the best young prospects.
Top two draft picks.
It's a handful every year.
Aaron Ekblad, first overall pick.
Right. You're talking about high draft picks, mm-hmm. or players because of circumstances get thrown into the fire. Like a guy like Victor Mete. You remember a couple of years ago, the Habs had all those injuries, right? But when you're talking about Hanala and what he's done, I mean, I can't really say anything that other people haven't already said. I mean, the skill is evident and the poise with the puck and what he's able to do, and he's able to break up plays defensively, and you can see that he is going to be a very good defenseman for the Jets for many years to come. The issue that I have is, what role are you going to put him in that he's going to be successful, and are you going to just have him around for the 9 games so you don't burn the entry-level deal? Burn 1 year of the entry-level deal, I should say, and that I could see happening, but I don't see him playing a full year with the Jets. So right now, it looks like it's kind of 50-50. And guys, if you read into what Paul Maurice has been saying, he's almost kind of doubting himself as he's speaking to the media, right? Because you can tell that
he can't believe that he's considering putting an 18-year-old in the lineup.
I mean, to me, you're looking at a finished Josh Morrissey. I mean, it's the same type of player. I mean, Hanala is a guy that I think has a very high offensive upside. Like, I don't necessarily think that we're talking about like Erik Karlsson or Brent Burns, but I think he's probably going to be, you know, at best a 45, 50 point defenseman, it looks like, right? Like, he's got those types of skills. He can distribute the puck. But, you know, Rick Tocchet was talking about this in Eric DeHatchick's article. You know, we've got Eric D coming up in about half an hour. He was quoting Rick Tocchet, and he was saying that one of the most important things you have to have in the game now is puck rushing defensemen, right? Every team has to have 4, 5, preferably 6 puck rushing defensemen. Hanala is a guy who his skating is elite, and it's only going to get better. He can move that puck. He can make plays. He can make not only a first pass, but he can make that play entering the zone if he needs to. He's a guy that you could probably even put out on the second power play. So to get back to your question, I'm kind of leaning towards he doesn't start the season with the Jets, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does start the season with the Jets. And if he does start the season with the Jets, I probably don't expect him to play a full year with the Jets just based on his age. And I don't know if you want him being a third pairing defenseman that's only playing, you know, 10 or 12 minutes a night.
So six defensemen on Thursday, Dave, mm-hmm. in New York. Who are the six defensemen going to be for the Jets?
Well, I'm inclined to think that he is going to play in the lineup on Thursday, and I'll tell you why. Because Sami Niku isn't ready. I think because Sami Niku's groin is a question mark right now. And as Paul Maurice has talked about, he's had 2 full days of camp. So I think if Sami Niku was healthy, that gives this coaching staff a little more certainty with, you know, I would have Tucker Pullman, Neil Pionk, Dmitry Kulikov, Josh Morrissey, Nathan Beaulieu, and Sami Niku. That would be the six. I would think that the coaching staff would be more inclined to use and have Betetto as your seventh defenseman, depending on what, and most likely sending Heinola back to Finland. But again, with the question mark around Sami Niku, I think you've got Heinola in your lineup.
I would expect Niku, to your point about Niku, I wouldn't be surprised if he starts the season on the IR at this point. You let him get that groin, let him get completely healed. Mm-hmm. You can sort of kick the decision can down the road a little bit.
Well, we'll learn today because the Jets are practicing at 1:00. And I think Paul Maurice said that he said there's 3 phases to what Niku needs to do. It's a skate on it. It's interesting. He said 3, but then he only listed 2 things. But
read between the lines.
but essentially, skate on his own, feel good.
Yeah.
Come back, skate with the players, feel good. And I'm assuming what he meant was in a non-contact uniform, and then the third phase would be skate in a contact uniform in a regular practice and then be ready. So I'm not saying it's impossible for Sami Niku now because the team had a day off yesterday. Mm-hmm. He may either do his own thing, or he may be in a non-contact uniform today. We'll see you around 1 o'clock. Stay tuned to LegalCurve.com. No big deal.
You're a company man.
From there, you will see what happens with Sammy Nikun. We'll get an idea. Obviously, he's not going to play tomorrow against the Wild for that afternoon game, but we'll see based on how the skates go for the rest of the week, how likely he is to be back in the lineup for Thursday.
Yeah, you know, but it is amazing that we're sitting here, you know, 5 days away from the start of the season, and Ville Heinola, who nobody really had penciled in as a you know, viable option for the Jets to start the season, is legitimately being considered as part of their top six, top seven defensemen.
And the Dave makes a really good point, though, with Niku's injury.
Yeah.
This opens up an
opportunity.
You now have three of your top right shot defensemen from last year out of the lineup. Plus, you have Niku, who was playing on the right side last year. Mm-hmm. And even though Heinola is a left shot defenseman, the point is you have so many options. You have so many, pardon me, openings on your defense, right? Like, so I agree with Dave. Essentially, you're choosing Heinola over Beteto.
And I think most Jets fans, at least to start the season, would be okay with that choice just to see what you got, because no disrespect to Anthony Beteto, you do know what his ceiling is as a player. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen it in his time with the Predators. You've seen it in his time with the Wild. You know what his ceiling is. You want to see, does Ville Heinola continue to impress?
That's right.
And does he shock people? Does he continue going?
The big question mark, though, Drew, still is Buff. Like, I realize that some people...
This is not a conversation we're having if Buffalin is...
Heinola probably doesn't make the team if... I think Dave would agree. He probably doesn't make the team if Buff is in camp and he isn't on a leave of absence, right? So even though it seems like, you know, Buff has been on a leave of absence forever, it really hasn't been that long, and we still don't know, right? Like, unless you can... unless we can bring someone on that can tell us whether or not Buff is coming back. I mean, it looks like kind of right now it's 50-50 or, you know, 60-40, depending on who you ask.
He certainly won't be in the lineup on Thursday in New York. I mean, that's not a possibility. He'll need some time to ramp up whenever he makes his decision. And right now we all just sit here, you know, twiddling our thumbs. The waiting game continues for Jets fans, just like it continues for Jets management. They're giving him as much time and space as possible. But in the meantime, on Thursday, they need to ice an NHL defense to face a New York Rangers team that is very excited about their season with Panarin, with Kaapo Kakko, with Jacob Trouba, and the things happening in New York that'll be very interesting. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Central Division. We start going division by division, team by team, looking at the Winnipeg Jets' rivals. Who's going to be a playoff team? Who's going to miss the playoffs for the upcoming 2019-20 season? We get into it with the Central Division up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Well, I was watching those guys. I liked Bork again. You know, there's something there. He and Letestu have some chemistry. They play it right. I liked Luoto on that. Ville's got some ice in his veins. And
more from Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about some of the players who've caught his eye at Jets training camp. We shift our focus to the Jets' chief rivals in the Central Division as we begin going team by team, division by division, breaking down the NHL ahead of the 2019-20 season, which gets underway, of course, the season on Wednesday, the Jets season on Thursday in New York. Still to come this morning in about 25 minutes' time, Eric DeHatchik of The Athletic is going to join us to talk about the Western Conference. As I mentioned, we start in the Central Division, the ultra-competitive Central Division. Most people think that this is the best division in hockey. I guess that's my first question for you guys. Is this the best division in hockey? Do you agree with that statement, that the Central is the most competitive, the most challenging division of the four divisions?
Yeah, well, I mean, really, it's between the Central and the Atlantic, right?
I would think so.
I mean, the Metropolitan Division, I think, is still strong, but I think you've seen, you know, an obvious fall off. And the two teams that I would mention that have fallen off the most, probably from perennial Stanley Cup contenders, are Washington and Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Right? And that's what made the Metropolitan Division so hard. But now you've seen the changing of the guard, right? You saw the Islanders make the playoffs surprisingly last year. The Devils are going to be better this year. I'm a little bit on the fence, and I realize we're going to make our predictions a little bit later. But to me, the Devils are a team that I like, but I don't know if I like them enough to make the playoffs this year, right? But the Central, yes, Drew, is the best division. How can you not say it's the best division when Minnesota is the worst team in the division? Mm-hmm. And I actually don't know if that's as much of a guarantee as some people think. Like, everybody seems to think Minnesota just put them down seventh. I don't know about that. I mean, Minnesota, I think, when you look at their team last year, and you can't not look. It's like the Arizona Coyotes. You can't look at these teams and not look at the injuries that they had.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if Matt Dumba is healthy, if you know, if Mikko Koivu is healthy, if all of these guys, Zach Parise, if all of these guys are healthy,
I
think they're probably closer. And they weren't that. How many points were they off? Like six,
7 points behind Colorado.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not like those players being in the lineup. You know, is that worth three or four wins? Probably. So I think I don't, by the way, I don't have the Wild making the playoffs. I just want to say that. But all I'm saying is if that is the worst team,
that's still a pretty good
team.
Then
that's the best division.
Let's start. So Nashville obviously won the division last year with their 100 points, 47, yep. 29, and 6 last season. We know St. Louis ended up winning the Stanley Cup, of course. So Nashville, let's look at their additions and subtractions. Their big addition to the roster is, of course, Matt Duchene. He comes over as an unrestricted free agent. Their subtractions from their lineup, the big minus out of their lineup is P.K. Subban, who, of course, is now a member of the New Jersey Devils. You look at a team like St. Louis. Their big addition, Justin Falk. They get him earlier this week in that trade with the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yep.
They lose Joel Edmondson. They lose Patrick Maroon. You know, you look at Nashville, you look at St. Louis, and those are the teams, you know, St. Louis, the Stanley Cup champion, the defending Stanley Cup champion. You look at Nashville, the perennial division winner.
Yep.
You know, are those
for the last 2 years.
For the last two seasons, are those two teams still are they the cream of the crop in the Central Division? Are they the best two teams in the Central Division?
I think so, and I do think that Dallas and Colorado are going to have something to say about that. But, yeah, I still have St. Louis winning the division.
You have St. Louis winning the division ahead of Nashville.
Right, and I'm obviously not confident in that at all, because when you have Tampa Bay winning the President's Trophy and getting knocked out in a sweep in the first round after putting up 120 points, I think – I really don't feel confident in any of these predictions, but if you've listened to the show the last 10 years, you know that all of my predictions are terrible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I probably have St. Louis winning the division, and if they don't win the division, they're probably going to be somewhere second, third, something like that. And same thing goes for Nashville. This is the problem I have with Nashville. I like Matt Duchene. I think he's going to be, and whether they have him with, looks like there's a good chance they're going to have him with Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson. And then Ryan Johansson's going to be your second line center there. They're going to be very strong up the middle. It looks like Kyle Turris is going to move to the wing. I really like
Don. You think Turris can't be as bad as he was last year?
Well,
you know, at least the Predators are
probably not. And, you know, if he's not working out as your third line center, then it makes sense to move him to the wing. But when you're talking about the Preds, I mean, Dante Fabro is going to replace P.K. Subban in the top four. Mm-hmm. And Dante Fabro is a highly regarded prospect. He can move the puck. He's really skilled. You know, Pekka Rinne is an excellent goaltender. We all expect UC Saros to play more games this year. Nashville is going to be fine. I just don't know if they're at that level they were 2 years ago, right? Like, I think that division is going to be fight, scratch, claw your way to the playoffs, try to get into the playoffs, and then once the playoffs roll around, anything can happen, because it doesn't matter what anybody says, the Jets were one game away from being in control of that series. If the series goes back to St. Louis and the Jets are up 3-2, most likely the Jets win that series. So even though, you know, you look at St. Louis, Nashville, the additions that Colorado and Dallas have made, right? Kadri, Burakovsky, you know who else am I forgetting here? Yunus Donskoy, Dallas picking up Pavelski and Perry. I mean, Colorado and Dallas have gotten better. I think Nashville is pretty similar. I think they're probably going to be around 95 to 100 points. Same thing goes for St. Louis. They're probably going to maybe be in the low hundreds, high 90s, but when you're talking about all these teams, I mean, all you want to do is get into the playoffs.
Sure.
That's all you want to do.
Well, I think that's what last year proved more than anything else, is that once you make the playoffs, anybody can win the Stanley Cup once you get in. I mean, you saw what happened to Tampa Bay with Columbus. You saw what happened with St. Louis. You saw what happened with Carolina, you know, getting all the way to the Eastern Conference Final. Just be one of the top eight teams in each conference. Be a playoff team, and the sky is the limit at that point.
Yeah, and I want to get Dave in here. The only thing I was going to say about St. Louis is, you know, Jordan Bennington's going to be fine. He's an elite goaltender, but you wonder...
Well, do you think he is really an elite goaltender?
Well, Kevin Woodley talked to us about it.
And he's absolutely an elite goaltender.
Kevin Woodley seems to... You know, he's a
goaltending maven.
Yeah, I was going to say, he knows more about goaltending than most people, and he seemed to think that Jordan Bennington was going to hit that next level in his game. So
he was a goalie that everybody who watched him play in the American Hockey League knew that it was just a matter of time before he was in the NHL. He was almost in the NHL a little bit late based on what he was doing in the American Hockey League, right, Dave? So, I mean, I think that's not so much my question mark. It's just that, can he sustain that for a full season, right? Because he did it for, you know, what was it, 40 games. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that, you know, Justin Falk, you know, he's going to make the Blues better, I think, offensively, and he's a little bit of a security blanket because Alex Petrangelo's in his last year.
He's a free agent.
And I do expect, well, he's got 1 year left. Petrangelo, I think, is going to re-sign, but I think that's part of the reason why they made that trade. Also, Jay Bouwmeester's probably going to be, you know, in his last year this year. Obviously, you know, he's had a great career, but, you know, that's all I'm saying. Blues are going to be a playoff team for sure. I just don't know if you're going to see as much magic as you saw in the second half, because it's really hard in this day and age to win that many games, right? You're talking about they won 70% of their games in the second half.
Dave, what about the Dallas Stars? The Dallas Stars obviously made the playoffs last year. They beat the Nashville Predators in that first round series. And they weren't overwhelmingly active in free agency, but they did get a big piece in Joe Pavelski. And then they get a couple of sort of reclamation projects in Corey Perry and Andre Sequeira. They lose Matt Zuccarello, who they had acquired at the trade deadline last season. What about the Dallas Stars? You know, they finished fourth in the division with 93 points. Is this a team that is one of the top contenders in the Central Division, or is this a team that you maybe think slightly overachieved in getting to the second round last season?
Well, I think, we always go in with these question marks. Every year we, you know, like Ezzie's point, we make these predictions and we call them bold predictions. But the reality is there's so much ambiguity. There's so much uncertainty. You know, who can know that, you know, Team X is going to lose their goaltender and have to use their backup for the majority of the year? So there's so many X factors with it that, you know, come into play. That's why I hate making these predictions because, again,
you never know who's going to get injured.
It's the reason why these teams play hockey. Like, if we knew what was going to happen in advance, then what the heck is the purpose of them playing? We don't know what's going to happen in advance, but we make these predictions anyways. So they're probably not worth the paper they're not written on. Having said that, I think Dallas, you know, big question mark is they had very good goaltending last year. Mm-hmm. Will they be able to keep that up and maintain that? You know, I think they allowed the least number of goals in the West for sure, I think. And so they were good at keeping the puck out of their net. They didn't score a ton. And so to me, you know, maybe they address that. You know, they've got, like you said, Drew, some reclamation projects. But this is a team that, to me, is poised to go for it. I mean, you're looking at that core in Dallas, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, it's almost like a little bit like Nashville. Like, you've got that experienced veteran core. You've got some nice young pieces that are coming up the ranks in Dallas. And to me, it's a function of you got to be ready to go for it with Dallas. And I think Jim Neal's probably in that mode of being aggressive. So I would expect, I can't tell you what Dallas is going to do because I think there's still some uncertainty, but I think that you would be wise to watch Jim Neal because I think he'll be aggressive in terms of acquisitions for his team this year.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Dallas Stars don't score a lot of goals. In fact, they were the third lowest scoring team in the league last year, which is incredible because they were one game away from going to the Western Conference Final. So I agree with you, Dave. I mean, you know what to expect out of Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, and Alex Radulov, even though Benn, you know, had a bit of a down year last year. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if they pair up Jamie Benn with Joe Pavelski, and that's your second line along with Jason Dickinson. And Rupe Hintz is a guy that obviously we all expect to have a really good year this year.
He's playing up on the top line right now with Seguin and Radulov.
Right, so you're kind of spreading the wealth there, but you know, as we always talk about this time of year, the depth is where, you know, what are you going to get out of a guy like Dennis Gurianov? What are you going to get out of, you know, Blake Como? You can't expect, you know, I really like Blake Como as a player, but, you know, he's a guy that you can't really expect more than 10 goals or something like that. And then when you're talking about the defense, arguably, you know, the best group of offensive defensemen in the league, when you're talking about Klingberg, Miro Heiskanen, and Lindell, people are already talking about, you know, Heiskanen as a future Norris winner. But, you know, I don't know, when you get down to Roman Polak and you know, you get down to Andre Sequeira, I mean, these are older players whose better years are behind them. You know, Roman Polak, I'm much more comfortable as a third pairing defenseman than in your top four. If Roman Polak is playing 17 to 20 minutes a night, I get a little bit nervous there. Ask Leafs fans about Roman Polak, but obviously Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin, I mean, a top five goaltending tandem in the league, maybe even, you know, top three. So,
well, especially when Bishop's healthy. I mean, his health is always, you know, it's rare that Bishop, you know, is able to play, you know, a significant number of games, you know, in back-to-back seasons without suffering from, you know, he's got the history of the hip injuries and things of that nature.
Well, and that's why with Pekka Rene too, like when you have these older goaltenders.
Sure.
Well, you see Saros is a good backup in Nashville. And
I mean, I think Saros might be a better goaltender than Rene is, even
But that's what I mean. So those are those question marks that we talk about. Like, are, if a guy takes a step back, is the backup prepared to go in there and take that role and then, you know, drag his team into the playoffs?
When we come back, we talk about the Colorado Avalanche, the Chicago Blackhawks, and a little bit more about the Minnesota Wild, and then we give our playoff teams from the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For the first time in their history, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions.
The St. Louis Blues, for the first time in franchise history, 51 seasons, have won the Stanley Cup.
And the time winds down. They did it. It's over. The game is over. The series is over. The wait is over. And the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history.
Time will tell if the Blues can repeat, but they do get to raise the Stanley Cup banner coming up on Wednesday as the season gets underway. The Jets in action, of course, Thursday in New York, but another preseason game to go tomorrow afternoon in St. Paul. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We've talked about the Predators, the Blues, the Stars, the Jets. Colorado Avalanche, to me, are just a fascinating team entering this coming season. We know that they were the fifth of five playoff teams from the Central Division last season. They upset the Calgary Flames in the first round, defeating the regular season Western Conference champions. This Colorado team has retooled and added to their roster. Yunus Donskoy is there. Pierre-Edward Belmar is there. Kevin Connaughton, Andrei Burakovsky, and then, of course, Nazem Kadri, the big acquisition from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Leaving the team, Carl Soderberg, Tyson Barrie, Alex Kerfoot, and Semyon Varlamov. To me, guys, the Colorado Avalanche, assuming that Rantanen is back in the lineup pretty quickly, because of course he is still unsigned, to me the Colorado Avalanche are one of my actual Western Conference favorites this season.
Yeah, and we talked about it last segment. I mean, it's really tough to even think that far ahead that we're talking about the playoffs, but I think we'd all agree this Avalanche team is going to be a playoff team. Yes. I think we would be surprised if we're talking about, you know, the Avalanche not being a playoff team come January or even earlier than that, then obviously something really has gone wrong. I agree. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jared Bednar. I think he's an excellent hockey coach. And, mm-hmm. you know, the moves that they make so much sense, right, guys? I mean, the Tyson Barrie trade for Nazem Kadri, that makes you better up the middle. Nazem Kadri is better than Carl Soderberg, who they traded.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about Tyson Barrie, you know that he's going to get a big payday. And you've got Cale Makar there, and you've got Bowen Byram, who obviously was sent back to the Western Hockey League, Vancouver Giants. But Cale Makar right now is up there with Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko as Calder favorites, right? And we saw a little bit of flashes of Cale Makar in the playoffs. But, you know, the Avalanche, you forget. I mean, they made pretty quick work of the Flames, right? Yes. The Flames won the first game, and then after that, it was all Avalanche.
Yeah.
Didn't they win the first game?
It was a five-game series, if I recall correctly.
Oh, right. You mean a sweep after game one.
I mean a sweep after game one. Yeah.
So when you're talking about, you know, this Avalanche team, I mean, they exceeded expectations last year, and I think they're going to be one of the most exciting teams to watch, Dave. And I think we all expect Mikko Rantanen to get done at some point over the next 3 to 5 days. I mean, it's tough to say, but it looks like now that Lyonnais is done, we know Mike Liut is the agent for Rantanen, so now he can concentrate. Not that he wasn't working on the Rantanen contract, but I think it's safe to say we're not expecting Rantanen to be out for any significant amount of time.
I'd be surprised. I mean,
he also returned to Finland with Patrick Laine.
When
he came back, because he was in Switzerland training with Laine,
yes.
He also returned to Finland.
So who knows, Dave? I mean, they could announce this, I mean,
that would be
in
my,
the next, in
that
next
would be
48
my guess.
Hours.
I mean, why would you, if you were training with the team, why would you leave?
Unless something was imminent.
Other than, not necessarily imminent, but to pack your stuff, get to North America, and then, like you said, it might not be today, but to Ezzy's point, I suspect he's going to be in the fold before the
You look at the
starts.
Forward group for the Avalanche, and then you add in, you know, Landeskog, McKinnon, Rantanen, you know, you add Donskoy, who's definitely a top six, top nine player. I mean,
he's a very versatile player. Yeah. And if you look at his analytics, I mean, he's the type of guy that the analytics community really likes. And I'd like to think that we're in the analytics community because we like to use the analytics, right? But you're talking about a guy who is surprisingly good offensively and very responsible defensively. He can
it's a sneaky signing.
It is, and you know
how impactful it should be.
You know what it was a sneaky signing was also Nichushkin, because Nichushkin right now, even though he scored no goals last year, he's going to be on your third line.
Yeah.
And I can't see him going another year without scoring any goals. I don't know if he scores 10 goals or 15 goals or whatever, but
for $700,000 or whatever it costs them, right. there's no downside to that signing. You take a flyer on a guy who his time in Dallas obviously didn't work out. He had a great rookie season. Everybody forgets that he had a terrific rookie season with the Stars, and then he went back to play in the KHL after a down second year, then came back and things didn't work out. But, you know, Nichushkin still has a ton of talent, and you put him in a role in Colorado where he's sort of the, you know, not forgotten about, but he's not expected to be anything you get out of him is a bonus.
Right, absolutely, because you mentioned it's a one-year contract and it's less than $1 million. So I agree, the signings that they've made, it's not just the trade they made for Nazem Kadri. He's going to be an excellent second-line center. I think Tyson Jost is going to have a really good year this year, former UND player. Burakovsky, we mentioned him earlier. And, you know, Cale Makar, guys, going back to Cale Makar, I mean, this is a player who I think is going to be so exciting to watch. He's going to put up some really good offensive numbers for the Colorado Avalanche. Obviously, I have some concerns a little bit when you get down to, you know, the Kevin Connaughtons a little bit. But if he's not playing that much on your third pair, I mean, we know that you can't necessarily have a Cale Makar on every single D pairing, right? But I think the goaltending is very good.
Is offensively inclined. And I mean, I just like that Colorado team. I like them a lot. The Chicago Blackhawks, though. I think the Chicago Blackhawks made one of the best signings of the entire offseason in Robin Lehner.
Yep.
I think Robin Lehner, based on what he did with the Islanders last year, I mean, what's Chicago's downfall been the last number of years? Okay. Corey Crawford can't stay healthy, and then behind him never worked out for the backup goaltender. So what do? You go get in, you bring in Robin Lehner coming off a career year in Long Island. Corey Crawford is your backup more or less now. I mean, maybe it's a 50-30 split or a 60, you know, whatever the numbers might be. Mm-hmm. But Robin Lehner solidifies their goaltending. And then you look at that forward group. And if, you know, Dylan Strome continues to do what he did after being acquired from the Coyotes last season, that's a pretty good forward group as well. I mean, their defense has even improved. They get a guy like Olli Maatta, and he's got his shortcomings, no doubt. But, you know, he's an NHL defenseman. You get Calvin DeHaan from the Hurricanes. The Blackhawks, to me, are battling with the Jets, I think, for a final playoff spot in the Central Division.
Yeah, I think they're going to be better than they were last year, and I agree. Just having Robin Lehner there, look, you're talking about last year they were a bottom five team on PK, and they were a bottom five team when it came to goals against. Mm-hmm. So right there, you got to expect them to be better in both categories. Just simply, just having Robin Lehner alone, I think, makes you better defensively, and we know that your best weapon on the penalty kill is your goaltender. But you're right, Drew. Right now, they have two number one goaltendies. They have two number one tendies.
Yeah.
And I do think Lehner is going to eventually, you know, surpass Crawford as the number one goalie. I expect him to be somewhere around 50 games, 55 games maybe as a ceiling, but I do think they're going to be very exciting. I mean, it looks like Alex Nylander has cracked their opening night 12
They get
forwards.
Him from Buffalo in exchange for Henry Jokiharu.
Yeah, and I actually like that trade better for Buffalo, but we won't get into that now. But Olli Maatta is a guy that I think I'm really curious to see what he does with Chicago, because he definitely fell out of favor there in Pittsburgh with Mike Sullivan. So the defense is going to be better. Calvin DeHaan, you mentioned, you know, whether he's a second pairing guy or a top pairing guy, really good, solid defensive defenseman. And you know, it all comes back to, though, for me, defense. That's the Chicago's going to score a lot of goals. I mean, they scored a lot of goals last year. Alex DeBrincat obviously had, you know, a breakout year, and Johnny Taves had a great year, Patty Kane. But that's going to be the huge question. Can they do that over the course of a season? Because they're better when it comes to goaltending. They're better on defense, but how much better? Because you're still competing against Nashville, Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado in that tough division.
Brass tacks it for me, Dave. How many playoff teams come out of the Central Division, and who are they?
Nashville, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Dallas, Colorado.
Nashville, so you do have the Jets making
it.
Nashville, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Colorado, Dallas.
That's not in any particular
order. Not in any particular order. The same five teams that made it out of the Central last year.
Yep.
Ezzy?
Yeah, the same for me. I want to say Chicago. I really do. But I just don't think they're going to be good enough defensively. Like,
even
with Calvin DeHaan and Olli Maatta, I mean, you know, and I'm a big Duncan Keith fan, but I mean, you know, Brent Seabrook is just not the same defenseman as he once was. And I just, you know, ideally, you probably want him as a third pairing guy and not in your top four. I just think he gives up too much. So for me, that's the big issue with Chicago. They gave up a lot of shots last year. And I just, I think that's going to be an issue again this year. You know, I think Jeremy Colliton did a great job with them in the second half of the season. But I just, I can't, I haven't seen enough to say that Chicago is going to be a playoff team. So I've got the same teams making it: the Blues, Preds, Avalanche, Stars, and Jets.
Well, I hate to be the disagree with you two fine gentlemen, but I do have the Blackhawks in ahead of the Winnipeg Jets.
Ooh.
I just look.
Wouldn't
at this,
surprise me, Drew. I mean, it, but
I just look at this Jets team.
They
and
were so bad defensively last year.
I look at this Jets team and I look at their forward group, and I'm going to include Kyle Connor, and their forward group is tremendous. But what they're going to give back on the defense, especially without Dustin Byfuglien, and I have questions about Connor Hellebuck, is too much for the Jets to overcome. I think the Blackhawks are going to leapfrog the Jets and be one of the five playoff teams out of the Central Division.
I guess we'll find out who's eating the mustard in a few months.
There you go. When we come back, Eric the Hatchick joins us. Eric covers the NHL for The Athletic. He joins us to talk about the Western Conference as part of our playoff preview show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.